For AccuWeather, I'm Cheryl Golden.
News Radio KONP presents the Todd Ortloff Show. Now, from Port Angeles, it's Todd Ortloff.
All right. Welcome once again to the program. First segment, we're going to talk about a really an incredible story. And it's heartwarming, to say the least. It's a bit sad, but it's also also kind of a happy one as well. You may have seen a little bit of posts online about Kelly and Alaska Bob's Vietnam Veterans Memorial ride, or it's a wall before I die is what they're calling this. The backstory is it's a kind of a bucket list motorcycle road trip of a couple of friends who discovered each other a while ago, at least. One is an Alaska truck driving Vietnam veteran. That's Bob, and he's joining us on the phone today, and we'll get to him in just a moment. And then there's Kelly Cook, who's a free-spirited biker chick. Is that self-described, Kelly?
Yes, it is.
There you go. I don't want to put words in your mouth. who are both kind of racing against time. Bob is terminally ill, and his illness has been brought on by exposure to chemicals while he was serving in Vietnam in the war there, and not a lot of time left. And he has a bucket list dream of getting to the Vietnam Wall Memorial in D.C. And Kelly doggone is going to get him there somehow. And they're going to ride there. And it's just a fabulous story. And it's all actually going to be kicked off here in Port Angeles. So that was a long introduction, but I'm going to go to Kelly first and talk just a bit about how you met Bob, because it was kind of an unlikely other motorcycle trip that you were on, right?
Yes. So about in 2010, there was a big motorcycle race called the Hokahe Motorcycle Challenge. And that was starting in Key West, Florida, and ending in Homer, Alaska. And the reason for that motorcycle challenge was that was also a veterans fundraiser, as well as for some Native American charities. And I was living in New Jersey at the time, and I decided to do this motorcycle run. So I sold all my stuff, and I hit the road, and I had a bunch of friends raising money, and hit the road and went on this trip to Key West and started out this race. And about a week into the race, I was in probably British Columbia, and I was pretty well in above my head at that point. Mm-hmm. I had expected to finish the race by myself and, you know, do it on my own. And about a week into that, I realized pretty quickly that that wasn't going to happen, and I really needed the help of other people. And lo and behold, that's when I met Alaska Bob, who was at a gas station, and he was also running the race. He likes to tell the story, I believe, that I was crying and asking for his permission to ride with him, but I have a different version of the story. So anyway, that's where I met Alaska Bob.
He's laughing at you now. Hi, Bob. We'll get to your side in just a minute. Hang on. All right. Go ahead, Kelly.
So he pretty much adopted me and was like, yeah, if you can keep up, you can ride with us. And I said, okay, that won't be a problem. And we just kind of started our friendship from there. And we actually made it to Alaska. So out of 800 people who started that race, only 230 finished. And we were two of those people. Mm-hmm. And we just developed a beautiful friendship, and we crossed the finish line together 2 hours before the finish line closed down on July 4th, 2010. And made it to Alaska. So that's how we met.
And developed a bond and a friendship.
Yes.
And here we are today. Okay, Bob, before I get to the rest of the story, do you want to add anything to that? Was she really crying in the gas station, Bob?
She was actually sitting on one of the parking logs that they had out there where cars parked in front of the gas station. And she was all teary-eyed. She may not have been crying, but she was teary-eyed.
All right.
She wanted to know if she could ride, and if you keep up, you can ride. Two gals that I was riding with prior to this were from New Jersey. And I just thought to myself, another chick from New Jersey.
Yeah, there we go, right?
Oh, my God. And somewhere around 100 miles an hour, I looked in my mirror. She was still with us. And I said, yep, well, we stopped for gas. Yeah, yep, you can ride with us. Yep, she can keep up. So she wasn't scared.
Well, I think it's incredible that you have formed a bond and a friendship, because this is really where we are today. Bob, you're very sick, aren't you?
pretty much.
What, and you have kind of this bucket, I know a bit of the backstory. One of the things you ultimately want to do, as I mentioned at the top of the show, is you want to get to the Vietnam War Memorial Wall, the wall at Washington, D.C., while you still can. I guess, tell us a little bit about how that became kind of the dream for you. I know you served in Vietnam, but what's really driving you to get there?
I wanted to do it here now for 2 or 3 years. And I've had people say, "Yep, I'll go." And every year, people come up with a reason as they can't go. And in March, when I found out that this is incurable, they said, "Yo, you do what you need to do." Well, I told everybody that there was supposed to be 6 or 7 of us going. And everybody opted out except Kelly. Yeah. Everybody opted out on it, and they said, "Can't you wait till next year?" Well, I may not be here next year, so it's the one thing on my bucket list that I haven't done, and I'm going to do. And I just told him, "You go this year, or you're going to go by yourself because I'm going this year." And you know, regardless, and Kelly she's held true and. By God, we're going.
All right. Well, I know a bit about Kelly. That doesn't surprise me. And, of course, you hear the rest of the story. She keeps up with you, so you'll be fine. Your illness, you're sick because of exposure of serving in Vietnam, right? I mean, essentially, this is a chemical exposure illness.
It is a chemical exposure illness. Yes, that's correct.
Right. How many tours, how long were you in Vietnam? Tell us a little bit about your experience there.
I was in Vietnam and Cambodia for 5 months, and we did what we needed to do, yeah. And we came home.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't.
You don't need to relive it at all. That's for certain. But you know, as you went along, have you had illness? Have you been sick for a long time, or has this really just all of a sudden really crept up on you? You mentioned that basically you kind of got a terminal diagnosis in March, but were you also having? Have you been battling this, I guess, for some time?
Well, this is one of these things that I adjust, adapt, and overcome. I think I ignored the symptoms more than anything, and just kept driving on, thinking, you know, I'm not old enough for this to happen. This is not happening to me, and I pretty much ignored it. And when it did catch up to me, it was actually too late. It's not actually the cancer that's going to kill me. It's going to be my kidneys.
Yeah.
Because it's attacked that part of me, and I've only got 14% kidney function.
Wow. Okay, so that said, I mean, this is kind of the reality of this. You're taking this trip across the country. How are you going to be able to do that with, you know, a diminished health capabilities as you have right now? What's the plan?
Adjust, adapt, and overcome.
There is a solid plan for beef jerky, whiskey, and cigars.
There you go.
That's part of what he just said. Adapt and overcome. Right. Okay. So, Kelly, tell us a bit, because the send-off is Sunday.
Yes.
So you're going to get together. Now, this is going to be a road trip across the... How long is it going to take? I mean, you kind of got to map this out, obviously, to get Bob there. But what's the plan?
Oh, the plan is still in development. So we do have a loose plan for the first 5 days. So we will be starting out from the vet center in Port Angeles, and anyone is welcome to ride with us. And the American Legion riders are going to be leading a run from Port Angeles to Port Townsend, where Bob and I will get on the ferry and go to Whidbey Island and start riding up through the Cascade Mountains. So that's going to be the first leg.
Are you picking a scenic route? I mean, to describe a bit. I mean, some of this, since you're out and about, are you going to try to, you know, take in as much as you can on the way?
Yeah, so Bob actually gave me the control of planning the route, which was surprising. There's a few things that we would like to see. So one thing that Bob would really like to see, and me too, I haven't seen it in a long time, is Crazy Horse in South Dakota. that's pretty much the one thing that we said we wanted to try to catch. Okay. But there's also a lot of amazing stuff out there that he and I haven't seen, especially stuff, you know, in the East Coast that we're going to try to ride.
All right. Bob, are you up for it? I mean, that's a loaded question, I think, at this point. But looking ahead, I mean, this could be a number of, you know, a week plus on the road, perhaps.
We'll be on the road for probably 3 weeks.
Yeah,
3 weeks.
What do you think about that, Bob?
Yeah, I just drove 3.5 days down here.
I know you did. So, which literally,
I don't have a problem with this at all.
Now we should point out. I mean, Bob, you drive a truck, right? That's kind of part of what you do as a job, right? It's not just as much as I think you like to ride a motorcycle everywhere you go. You do also drive for a living.
I do. I drive from Kenai to Prudhoe Bay once a week.
Yeah. So you're a road warrior, to say the least. I guess this is why I shouldn't even really question if you can do 3 weeks on the road, even in your condition, right?
It's just a mind over matter. You set your mind up, you just do it.
Now, have
I sat on the couch for a year doing chemotherapy twice a week, and right up until March when they said they can't fix this, and went to once a week doing chemotherapy, and I'm going back to work.
Wow.
I just can't sit here anymore. So once a week, it's 2,000 miles a week, and it gives me a few days to heal, and then I go do it again.
All right. What kind of bike do you ride, by the way? I should ask you guys both of this. What are you going to be riding, Bob?
I've got 2002 Road King.
Okay, very good. Kelly?
I have a 2015 Harley-Davidson Street Glide.
All right, yeah. So have you guys done other rides in the interim since that 2010 thing? I'm assuming you've gotten together and done some other things since then?
Life has changed a lot in between the time we met and now, and we have managed a few times to get together. And since we met, I've gotten married and had a child.
Yeah.
We've both gone through some other pretty big tragedies in our life. And so over the past 9 years, we talk on the phone pretty regularly, and we got to ride together once, right, Bob, in Washington?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Was that it? Yeah.
That's about it.
So this would be the first time we're actually riding any substantial miles together.
So this would be really great. I mean, it's the ultimate buddy story on top of all of this, isn't it?
And unlikely buddies,
yeah,
too.
It is. Yeah. Now, I know you have a Facebook page. You're going to document things as best you can, right? Did I understand that right? On Ride Wall Before I Die on Facebook.
Yes, we have a Facebook page, and social media is not my strong suit, but I'm really making efforts to, to get that under control.
Get a couple pictures so we can see you guys out there actually.
Oh, yeah,
doing
this. We'll be documenting every day and showing where we are, because ultimately we're hoping that people might put us up and feed us.
Well, that's the other part of this. Yeah. I mean, have you made plans for stopping and how you're going to take, you know, because there'll be times where you're going to need to rest, obviously.
So
10 cigars and whiskey.
There you go.
10 cigars and whiskeys, that's pretty much the plan. Yep, there's lots of places to camp throughout this country.
You guys are rugged bikers. I that's really dumb of me to even ask this question.
No, because there will be like every third day where we're like, you know, a shower and a pillow would be really nice today.
Right on. I it's incredible. And Kelly now lives in this area, so I mean, in all of this, you're no longer a Jersey girl anymore.
I'll always be a Jersey girl. But the locals have accepted me.
Exactly. We should point out she's the newest member of Pennies for Quarters board as well,
yes.
Which is kind of how I got into this whole, learned about it from my good friend Matthew Rainwater, who said, you got to talk to these guys. And I know they're kind of helping as well with the big send-off. So the plan then, you guys, is to get a whole bunch of people to the Veterans Center on Sunday. About what time? About 10?
The rally, starts at 10 and then kickstands up at 11 for the ride if anyone wants to ride with us to Port Townsend.
See, that'd be great. Can you imagine, you know, thousands of bikes going with you at least the first leg? That'd be great.
And I'd like to mention that the Legion Riders informed me that my planning may not have been the best due to the fact that the Lavender Festival is occurring this weekend. So,
although if you hit it that morning, you might be okay. You might be just in the ebb of the flow that goes back. You know, it went a little later in the day. Oh my gosh, you wouldn't want to be trying to get where you were going. But I think you'll be all right. Okay, so 216 South Francis Street. If you don't know where the Veterans Center is, come and meet Bob and Kelly and send them off. And good luck to both of you. Bob, it's great. I know that you literally rolled into town about 5 this morning. So I appreciate you dragging yourself to the phone to talk with us for a bit.
Well, I had full intentions of being there, but I set an alarm this morning. My phone didn't update the time, and I got up at 11:45.
Yeah.
And Nikki said, she's already gone.
Well, it's okay. We'll take you on the phone anytime. And we're going to follow you guys along the way, and perhaps we can check in at some point, because it's a great, great story. And we're going to get Bob there. He's going to get to check a thing off his bucket list as well. Are you riding back? How are you getting back, I guess? Or is this going to be there and back, so the 3 weeks?
I think whenever you start a motorcycle road trip, there's always the potential that a truck, trailer, or an airplane is going to come into play, just depending. That's happened in my life. The plan is to ride there and back.
Okay, gotcha.
Both of us on our own motorcycles, and also anything can happen.
Yeah, I love it. Free spirits, to say the least. Kelly, good to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very
Kelly
much.
Cook there. And Bob, good luck. And thank you so much for your service, and Godspeed to you, all right?
You betcha.
All right. That's Alaska Bob there, Kelly Cook, who they're off on Sunday for this tremendous adventure across the country to get Bob to the Vietnam Memorial Wall in D.C. before he passes away, which we don't know how much longer he may have. So I just a tremendous story. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back. We're going to talk about a local connection with the Apollo 11 moon landing right after this. So stick around.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
Your community-minded friends at First Federal bring you the Community Corner, highlighting good things happening right here in our area.
Upholding our commitment to community service is multifaceted for First Federal and its staff. First Federal serves each customer every day with state-of-the-art services, loans, and savings plans. They work to help partnering local businesses grow with attractive services and rewards. Finally, First Federal supports our service organizations, programs for youth, and the betterment of our community for everyone. Working for you, working for our community. First Federal, member FDIC.
Peninsula kids are enjoying the fun of summer vacation, so school is the last thing they want to think about. But for the team at First Federal, now's the time when we grown-ups need to be looking ahead to another school year. First Federal invites you to become a school-asaurus and help drop off school supplies at a First Federal branch near you. At the end of August, we'll take all of the school supplies we collect and distribute them to local nonprofits to help families with back-to-school readiness. Be a school-asaurus and drop off your donation of school supplies, backpacks, notebooks, pencils, whatever kids need to begin a new school year today at any First Federal branch.
Community Corner on KONP, presented by First Federal.
When you're entertaining out-of-town visitors to the North Olympic Peninsula, wouldn't you love to show them something they'll never forget? Wright Brothers Aviation can make that happen with scenic tours of the majestic Olympic Mountains. Wright Brothers can show you breathtaking beauty that neither you nor your guests will ever forget. Make a memory that will make your spirit soar. A scenic ride from Wright Brothers Aviation, Fairchild Airport, Port Angeles.
Call 452-6226 or click WrightBrothers.com.
When your club, civic organization, or church group has a special event coming up, spreading the word can pose a real challenge. KONP would like to help in letting everyone know. Visit our new website, MyClallamCounty.com, and post your announcement. There's no charge. Go to MyClallamCounty.com. Under the Community tab, click Submit an Event and just follow the directions. Your event will receive a free posting that'll be seen by thousands. It's fast, easy, effective, and free. The success of your event may depend on how many folks show up, and they won't show up if they don't know about it. So take advantage of this free service from Radio Pacific, the power of three. Visit MyClallamCounty.com. Under the Community tab, click Submit an Event and follow the easy steps. Nonprofit organizations only. Post your group's announcement today at MyClallamCounty.com. A free service of Radio Pacific, KONP.
Hey, welcome back to the program. And again, thanks to Kelly Cook and Alaska Bob. They're talking about their big travel plans to get Bob to the Vietnam Memorial Wall in D.C. before he dies. He has terminal cancer and may not have much longer. And they're going to set off on Sunday on this ride. We should point out this also is a fundraiser for Pennies for Quarters. They've already raised about $1,500 for Pennies for Quarters. So if you'd like to donate just in support of this, all of the money that's raised is going to help homeless veterans here in Clallam County through Pennies for Quarters, a tiny houses program that they're putting together. And a couple of ways you can do a donation if you'd like to support the ride and support the cause is just go to the Facebook page and then search Wall Before I Die. You can go there. They've got a link set up as well. And also you can go to the actual send-off Sunday at 10 a.m. at the Veterans Center in Port Angeles, where the Pennies for Quarters tiny house model home is going to be there. And you can make a donation as well as send off the riders, Kelly and Alaska Bob, on their way. And we have one other piece of business in the segment. We neglected to say happy birthday to Piper. She's 7 years old today. Piper is Kelly's daughter, and we want to make sure that we say happy birthday to her as well as her mom gets ready to ride off for about a month with Alaska Bob to get him to the Vietnam Memorial Wall in D.C. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. We'll check in with some news coming up at the bottom of the hour. And then we're going to talk with a local retiree, someone who's been here a number of years now, but Joey Lazaro is his name, and he was right there in Mission Control for the Apollo program, including Apollo 11, which on Saturday we're going to mark the date 50 years ago that a man walked on the moon, and Joey had a real firsthand seat at that, and we'll get his take and his remembering of those years, of those days, all those 50 years ago, right after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
At Olympic Peninsula Title, we wear a lot of different hats. We're investigators, analysts, and the protectors of property rights. We seek a high standard of accuracy. Our commitment to exceptional service strengthens our mission. We reduce risk. We stay on top of the current issues affecting property rights. We sweat the small stuff to give our customers the peace of mind they deserve. When it's time to choose a title company to close your transaction, opt for Olympic Peninsula Title, locally owned and family run since 1981.
President Trump distanced himself today from the chance of send her back, coming from his supporters last night at a campaign rally in North Carolina.
They started speaking very quickly. It really was a loud, I disagree with it, by the way, but it was quite a chant.
The president said he felt badly about the chance, but did not say he would stop similar eruptions in the future. The current controversy started when the president tweeted about four Democratic congresswomen of color, saying they should go back to where they're from. This afternoon, the president announced the U.S. Navy shot down an Iranian drone in the Strait of Hormuz. He says it was a defensive action and the drone was threatening the safety of the ship and the ship's crew. An American suspected of fighting with ISIS is now in the U.S. He was transferred from Syria, will now face prosecution. Officials say he's the fourth American ISIS fighter who's been brought back to this country. A judge in New York denied bail for Jeffrey Epstein on sex trafficking charges. He will remain behind bars until his trial.
Here is your AccuWeather forecast. This afternoon, partly sunny and breezy with a few showers, high 65. Partly cloudy tonight, low 51. To kick off your weekend tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sunshine, high 66. A few clouds will hang around tomorrow night, low 50. On Saturday, mostly sunny, high 70. Clear Saturday night, low 53. Mostly sunny and nice on Sunday, high 71. For AccuWeather, I'm Cheryl Golden.
Of course, this is the 50th anniversary of the landing on the moon, and the Apollo program certainly has been looming large in the news as we start to look at it in this month, in fact, in July. We'll mark 50 years ago. And I always am amazed at who you find around our parts that are involved in something historic. And I was just chatting with Joey Lazaro before we went on the air and did not know this, but Joey's been, he's a musician locally. I know him from that, but did not realize that Joey's previous life was working in the Apollo program. And he's retired here in the last decade or so. And we're going to talk a bit about those days back in 1969-ish and all of that. So, Joey, good to see you again. Thanks.
It's good to be here, Todd. Thank you.
Let's. You were kind of joking. This is the first time you've really talked about this in a lot of years since leaving the program. So tell us what you did back then, because you had a relatively important role in what was going on in the Apollo 11 program.
Well, I was in the military, and they were looking for people that had communication skills because there was a program coming on called the Manned Orbiting Laboratory, and that was strictly a military kind of a program. So they needed people with communication skills, and I happened to be on a missile crew. I was a launch control officer, and we used various kinds of communication. So NASA was looking for people to go sit in positions around the world that would communicate with the astronauts as they circle the globe. Okay. So they picked on me, and then Vietnam came along, and so they said, nope, you're not going. Stay where you are. And then they had the accident, which was a delay in the Apollo program for about 20 months. And then so I said I didn't go, but that delay happened. At the end of that delay, they called me again and says, okay, we'd still like to have you. So I was sent down to Houston, and it was just by chance, luck, whatever you want to call it, that I went down there.
And so, you were actually in mission control then.
Yes, I was.
As we watched the rest of the world as that historic flight unfold, you were in there.
Yes, I was. Well, I went down in 68, so I saw Apollo 7. I was there from Apollo 7 actually to Apollo 15.
All right.
So I was there for almost 4 years.
Describe Apollo. I mean that first moon landing. You know, exciting stuff. But boy, I would think in that room. There was a lot of breath holding going on.
Well, on Apollo 11, yeah, there was. It was pretty much under control. And I've told several people here that we were so involved in doing what we had to do that we escaped some of the emotions that people were seeing on the screen. It was very exciting for us. And if somebody stood up and said, yay, they'd say, sit down and do your job.
Right.
They'd keep us settled down, focused on what we were doing. There was critical times. They landed on the moon, and there were some critical periods of time where we had to look and see if they could stay on the moon. And we had various cutoff points. Okay, we can stay because we can do this. And we were ready to get off that moon as soon as possible. So there wasn't any time for joy right then.
Exactly.
And so we didn't really erupt until the guys came back and they landed in the water and on the deck of the ship. Then we were allowed to light up a cigarette or a cigar, wave a flag. But before that, sit in your chair and do your thing.
Exactly. What a tremendous time, though, in American history, because, you know, we made as a country a commitment to do this thing. And yeah, I guess it kind of shows what America can do if it puts its mind to it.
You're exactly right. It was national will that you had to have to make it happen. It was expensive, but it wasn't nearly as expensive as some of the other programs that were on. A lot of people said, well, why are we going to the moon? We can put money into social programs. And it was only about 10% of what we were putting into social programs.
Right.
The military was 20 times more than that.
Yeah.
So it was an advancement that we had to make. We were falling behind. It was a race to get to the moon with Russia. So it was national pride, national will, and guys are very dedicated, very focused.
There, of course, as you mentioned along the way, I mean, it wasn't an easy route from the first days up until Apollo 11, then even beyond that. So there were setbacks. Maybe you can describe a little bit about kind of how things felt going through the program. Literally uncharted territory, I guess. And every time you you know, went for a launch or did anything, there was always something new. And maybe something not. You wouldn't know what was going to happen until you did it.
Yeah, many of the things we did on a flight were the first time that it had ever been done. We did a lot of testing on the ground, but not until we got up there that you could really do it. So everything was, you know, kind of programmed out, and we did things in midstream. For instance, we went to the moon on Apollo 8. We didn't have the lunar module with us, and we should have done that. That should have been a complete package. We were behind on developing that, so the guys went to the moon without the lunar package. And went up near the moon, circled around, and came right back. That was totally unprogrammed until near the end of the program.
So, interesting. Yeah. So technically, if things had stayed on track, 8 would have been the moon landing.
Probably,
Or could have been.
It could have been.
At least. Mm-hmm. What was your job specifically at Mission Control as you went through things? I mean, you talked about staying focused. What did Joey Lazzaro have to make sure happened?
Well, I sat in a console position, and there's only about 30, 35 people in the room, actually, in the actual room itself. There was two positions in our console. One was what they call an INCO position, instrumentation and communication officer, and the other one was a procedures officer. The procedures officer, and I was predominantly that position, we controlled the boards that you saw in the front of the screens. We wanted a lot of information was coming down, and each of the positions wanted to see information on these big screens. They're called IDAFORs. We had four 10x10 IDAFORs and one 10x20 IDAFOR that showed the track of the spacecraft as it went around the Earth and then ultimately up to the moon and back. So we put information on those screens that were needed by the guys sitting in the consoles. That's kind of what procedures did. Plus, they had clocks all over the place. We'd count up, we'd count down, and depending on the phase we were in, so there's all kinds of timing going on. Especially when you're in Earth orbit, you keep losing track of the astronauts as they're circling the Earth.
Right.
So during those periods of time when they were out of sight, we had recorders going. And then when they come back into sight, we would dump those recorders to the ground. So our position was to turn the recorders on, capture everything similar to what we have in airplanes right now. We had flight and data recorders, voice recorders.
You could go back, see what was happening when you had lost live contact.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we would download those when they appeared over, say, the next location where we had connections. And then we would keep doing that in Earth orbit. So we were constantly turning recorders on and off. When we got farther out and got into the moon, we could send commands to the spacecraft, to the television antenna. Excuse me, the TV set that was on the rover, we had control of that from our console. So as the two astronauts are roaming around and they're going in different directions, we had the ability to yaw in and out, zoom in and out, yaw back and forth, I should say, tilt it up and down. We would follow their movements, and which was kind of fun to do. And my boss was called Captain Video. They give him that nickname, which is kind of neat. But there's a time delay from the time the signal goes to the moon and back. So we had to practice those folks moving, anticipating where they were going so we can track them.
How long did it take when you sent a command to the TV?
It was
to
two or three seconds.
Yeah, okay. So you had to say, I think we're going right in about 3 seconds.
Yeah. They wouldn't tell you what they were doing. Yeah. I mean, they weren't about to.
How cowboy-esque was it with those astronauts and such? I know they did a little ad-libbing on things. In fact, I mean, it's pretty well known that the landing spot, it had not manual control taken over, it would have been the wrong spot to land in because of a lot of boulders.
Absolutely.
And
we had
things.
A crater there that he was coming into where we were going to land. So Neil had to take control of it and keep us going. So we're kind of getting short on fuel.
Yeah, and that was the other part of this story. And I would think at Mission Control, was that a little tight in the pants, so to speak?
We were watching them very closely. And everybody's eyes were on the gauges to see how much we had. And we were down to seconds, not few seconds, but we had some time, but not much.
And as you mentioned, I mean, everything was timed specifically. You got a gas gauge, but it's not like you'd think in your car. Although I understand there was a little bit of slop factor, I guess, in it, but you don't really know what that was.
Right. Yeah, it's really amazing how precise things were.
Yeah.
In later missions, when the astronauts would go behind the moon, they would disappear from sight. And our computers would dictate or predict exactly when
they're
going behind the moon.
Yeah.
And then when they come out, they're right there when the computer said. I mean, that always amazed me how precise.
Yeah.
And we knew exactly where they were.
And the other thing is that, I mean, our watch has more, you've got a smartwatch right now. You have more memory in it than you guys were working with in computers then or what was on the spacecraft.
We had what they had. We had five massive computers. The whole first floor of the building that we work in was computers. We had IBM 360 75 computers. One was online all the time. Mm-hmm. One was a backup for it, and it was kind of mirroring its image, and we had one that was down for maintenance if it needed that. Another one we could do some training on. So these five computers were controlling everything we did. A huge room full of computers.
Yeah.
Your little smartphone is about as smart as those guys
were. I know, which is just amazing. You know, but it does kind of lead to, and maybe we'll get to this a little bit later, but, a lot of people who create the Apollo, all of that program led to things like us getting a smartphone and having some of the technology we have today. Had we not had that space program in the 60s, we probably would have found out about things, but I think it did launch us into where we are today. Wouldn't you agree?
I totally agree. And, NASA did more than just inventing Tang.
Yeah.
They developed a lot of technologies. I guess if one shortcoming, I work twice for NASA. Actually, I worked for 4 years during the Apollo program, and the last 4 years of my career I spent at the headquarters command up in Washington, D.C., worked for NASA also. They have some folks up there that are their job is to take the technology that we learned and put it on in the industry. So it's developed by the government, and so that people, you know, were eligible to have that technology too, and they could take that technology mm-hmm. and develop it and everything they want to. I think they could have done a little bit better job of promoting what they were doing, and especially after Apollo 11, interest waned dramatically.
Yeah.
And that's the time we had to show what the benefits of going to the moon really were about, and we should have probably put our best foot forward and did a lot of the technology promotion. This is what we did.
Yeah.
Down in Houston, after the missions, and we do a lot of experiments up there, we had a table there with all this technology on it, and contractors would come in and pour over the information. Mm-hmm. It was available to them, and they could develop their products based on the technology that we had. Better job of promoting themselves, because promoting means more funding.
Yeah, right.
You know, if you can show you're doing something very worthwhile, then the program would continue. But we were in Vietnam at the time, so right after 11, interest just backed down.
All right. Joey Lazaro, who's a resident in Squim, spent some years in some famous times with the with NASA and the Apollo missions, and we're talking a bit about that in retrospect to the moon landing some 50 years ago, and we'll talk a bit more with Joey about his experience and kind of how things are right after this.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
It's time for the engines to roar. The Extreme Sports Park is ready. Don't miss ASB Pro Sprint Boat Racing, Saturday, July 27th. Join thousands of fans in the sunshine to see crazy high-speed action, 6G turns, and incredible acceleration. For tickets, camping information, and more, visit extremesportspark.net. Sprint Boat Racing is back July 27th and September 7th at Extreme Sports Park, Port Angeles.
Glam rock cover band The Nasty Habits are in town, and Seven Cedars Casino is where you'll find them. On Saturday, July 20th at 9 p.m., listen to all of your favorite hits from one of the peninsula's favorites. The Nasty Habits will keep you entertained and on your feet. So come out, grab a bite, roll the dice, and get ready to hit the dance floor to the tunes of The Nasty Habits on July 20th. For more information, visit our Facebook page or go to sevencedarsresort.com.
When your club, civic organization, or church group has a special event coming up, spreading the word can pose a real challenge. KONP would like to help in letting everyone know. Visit our new website, myclallamcounty.com, and post your announcement. There's no charge. Go to myclallamcounty.com. Under the Community tab, click Submit an Event, and just follow the directions. Your event will receive a free posting that'll be seen by thousands. It's fast, easy, effective, and free. The success of your event may depend on how many folks show up, and they won't show up if they don't know about it. So take advantage of this free service from Radio Pacific, the power of three. Visit myclallamcounty.com. Under the Community tab, click Submit an Event and follow the easy steps. Nonprofit organizations only. Post your group's announcement today at myclallamcounty.com. A free service of Radio Pacific, KONP.
Black Diamond Junction, voted the peninsula's best live entertainment for the past 3 years, brings great classic hits from the 60s to today.
Don't you want somebody to love?
All easy on the ears and great for dancing.
I'm gonna hurt my heart.
If you've got an event, you need BDJ to bring the music. Contact blackdiamondjunction.com or Black Diamond Junction on Facebook.
All right, welcome back. Joey Lazaro is my guest. He lives in Squim and was part of the Apollo program back during the moon landing days and beyond as well. I've got to ask you a little bit, because you were there Apollo 13 as well, right?
I was there from Apollo 7 through to Apollo 15.
So let's talk about that, because you know, you mentioned the waning of things after Apollo 11 and the landing on the moon, but there was, I guess, in a scary way, a reinvigoration at Apollo 13. Certainly it's been documented well about what could have been a very tragic end to that mission, and some heroic things that happened, and you were there again for that. So describe a bit about that, although this isn't really about the moon landing, but what came after.
Yeah, well, that was a very exciting time for us. We had the whole world jumped up and says, what can we do to help? And foreign countries from anywhere, anything they could do. We had some pretty stable guys in the control room, and we had concentrated what we had to do. I guess one interesting facet was the doctors wanted to know how the medical condition were of the astronauts. Mm-hmm. And so in order to get that information down, they had to beam it down, and we had to turn on equipment so they could monitor what they were doing. We had to tell the doctors all that stuff that you're going to see these their astronauts and what they're doing and what their physical health is. We can't let you see it because we have to conserve energy. And we had to turn down. We spent most of our times with schematics, turning off pieces of equipment that were non-essential for life.
Right.
So we got it down to the very bare minimum.
So you were directly involved in that. A lot of what we've seen in the movies and the shutdown that happened.
Yeah, we had a room full of guys. Yeah. And at that point in time, just about everybody that had a position in the control room had a backup that was ready to come on. We were usually too deep. Mm-hmm. We had another set of guys behind us because of more brains working on it. So we ended up with maybe 50 in the room at the time when it was a tragic. And we had a lot of guys working on simulators and see what they could do to make things get better. We had a lot of astronauts that were on the ground. So they were doing things on the ground to try to certify, if you will, any procedure that we took. We had simulators that they would go into and try tactics and what we could do. So we were looking at any possible way we could shut down anything that used electrical power. We did that.
Wow. Wow. Now, of course, many people, Ron Howard's movie, Apollo 13, and I understand fairly accurate. He was very meticulous, I think, in trying to get it as accurate as possible. Of course, when you make a Hollywood movie, there's going to be a few things that happen. But what were your thoughts? Because I'm certain you watched it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Maybe more than once.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting. We always had some consultants on the site when they do that. So we had some astronauts down there. So the realism of a lot of these movies is actual. One of the things I had a hard time was look at Kevin Bacon and Tom Hanks and saying those guys were astronauts. That was hard for me. I mean, our astronauts were astronauts. You know,
weren't actors.
Yeah, they weren't actors. Yeah. And these guys were good. But it was trying times. It really was.
But in Mission Control and with the simulations and things, pretty accurate as to what was going on in your life, I guess, at that time.
Absolutely. Yeah, they had a couple of the actors there. Gary Sinise did a very, very good job. Ed Harris was Gene Kranz. Gene Kranz was my boss. Yeah. And he did a great job of portraying some of those actors.
What was Gene Kranz like to work for?
Gene was a great guy. Gene was a fighter pilot. Gene crashed a couple of airplanes, went back and there were F-84s and F-86s. So he'd been through some times. He was very stern. Of course, he's the guy they attribute saying, failure's not an option. I think what he really said was there's many options out there, but failure's not one of them. Mm-hmm. I think that's what the real words were. So he was a taskmaster. He kept the room under control. He was just a heck of a director.
Definitely the right guy probably to have there during that time.
Yeah. And right behind him was Chris Kraft. Mm-hmm. And Chris Kraft, of course, was very knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. When the missions were short and they only lasted a day or maybe hours, we had a team headed up by Chris Kraft. He was the flight director. Of course, as missions got longer and we'd spent days in orbit, we couldn't do it with 30 guys. We had to do it with 90 guys, three shifts. One flight director wouldn't do it. So we had several flight directors. Gene Kranz, probably the most notable, he's the best spokesman we've had. Yeah. But Chris Kraft was in the room, too. So there was a lot of excellent minds working on our issues and problems.
Fascinating times. And I guess looking back, hard to believe it's been 50 years, I guess, probably first thing to say. But, how is it for you looking back now? You these landmark kind of days come up I probably don't think about it every day, but here we are.
No, I don't. I guess it's a shame we did something that was tremendous and that the interest dropped off. Now, I understand the interest is picking up a little bit more. The talent, the pool of people that we had was so good, and to lose that school of talent that we had and the people that we had in the program was rough. And like I say, after 11, it started waning down, and a lot of the people left. They went to one of our supervisors worked for the Department of Transportation, and he siphoned off some of those guys that wouldn't have had jobs possibly after that. Another one was University of Texas. They had an underwater laboratory there out in the Gulf of Mexico. And, of course, the living environment, that you would have in space as kind of similar, living environment right. under the water. Right. So a lot of the guys went down there, environmental communication guys, they went to work for the Texas. So, but it was just sad to see that happen. One of the jobs I had later on was write up citations for the astronauts that flew. Every astronaut flew got a promotion to the next rank.
Okay.
Many of them were military men.
Yeah.
They also, we had a little schedule of the kind of medals that they receive after each mission. The first mission, they got this medal. Second mission, yeah. they got that medal. Each one with a little bit more prestige than the one before. And it was getting harder and harder, especially with the military, to get medals for these folks, because now they're saying, well, it's kind of routine. What are they doing? We got guys mm-hmm. fighting in Vietnam. They're the guys that deserve the medal. So it was a hard case to
the
make.
The times were different, yeah.
They really changed. Yeah. And the end result was it was supposed to be 20 moonshots or 20 missions, I should say, not all moonshots. And it was supposed to be up to 20. Well, they cut the last three down for funding purposes. And we only had one scientist flown, and that was on the very last one.
Wow. That's kind of interesting. You would have to think if those other three missions would have went what?
They would probably have more scientists on board, right. and the fact that we were on the moon and all the things they could have done on the moon. We had packages that we put out on the moon mm-hmm. that were seismic packages and all kinds of things that we could detect what's going on in that environment. And they were laid out there. But as far as having a scientist, the National Science Foundation was going crazy because these were all – flying astronauts, and they wanted a scientist up there.
Right.
So Harrison Schmitt went up there. He was a geologist on Apollo 17, and he was their scientist. But
and that was it, though.
That was it. Program went away.
And then, just to fast forward, I mean, as a former NASA guy, you must have just kind of cringed at what happened with NASA funding and all of that even later, decades later. And, I mean, we're kind of at a point where we're almost right now rebuilding a space program.
Yeah, we are. There's a lot of talent out there, and they'll find more. It's just that when you have to break up the team like that with all that talent, most of those folks now are in their 80s and coming right. up into their 90s. So we have an organization, and we had maybe 100 guys in the organization. There's only about 46 of us left now. And there's a lot of people that were on the fringes, but the talent's going away. And about the only thing that happens from this organization, they let you know about obits, and the guy's not with us anymore.
Yeah.
And so that's the sad part. But it sounds like there's a lot of independent activity that's going on with contractors not affiliated with the government. And hopefully, that has a wave of money that comes in, and we'll be able to get out into Mars and –
there's a lot of science to be done than that,
and
I'm always just fascinated the physics of this stuff, as you mentioned about. I mean, I'm sure you were amazed by how a few calculations and you can figure out these things that seem impossible.
When we went down there, there was a lot of training because I was an instrumentation guy and working communication. We had simulators, and I put about 125 hours into the lunar module, sitting in the module working the controls, because we needed to know what they had up there so we could help them below. And in the command module, I had 160 hours or so of their communication system. When you walk into these simulators, there's buttons and switches and all over the place, and you're overwhelmed until you see that they've got them kind of packaged in certain areas.
And then you realize
this is what I'm on. Oh, this is a communication. That's lights. That's environment. And
So
we had a lot of training on the ground to be able to do what we were doing when we got into the room.
Interesting. So you literally had a chance to be hands-on on the stuff that was going up as well. Just before we wrap up, I got to get your impressions of the Apollo 11 astronauts. Tell me about Armstrong. Tell me about, did you get a chance to meet them at all? What were they like? Because we all, I think, know him as the celebrities that, had ticker tape parades and all of that, but not really leading
Each of them had their own personality.
Mm-hmm.
They were all most of them were fighter pilots. Yeah.
And with that comes
hours,
a certain
the scarf
attitude,
around the neck
right?
and the goggles, and all that. So they were their own men. They were very, very talented guys. Each one was a little different. When I first went down there, I had Buzz Aldrin pinned on a medal from a previous service that I had. Neil Armstrong was a very quiet man. Collins was a quiet guy also. Buzz Aldrin, he's out there. Let me say that. He makes himself very visible. He's done some interesting things.
He's rather celebrity. Okay.
He's a celebrity.
Right.
Yes, he is.
And continued on in that capacity. I think the other ones, quite frankly, faded back into the backdrop a little bit after they were done serving.
We had a lot of military officers there.
Yeah.
People, you didn't know that because we were all wearing civilian clothes. The military officers, they're all very, very competent, and they did some great stuff. And so we wanted to get them back into the military to make use of what they learned. A lot of the folks, it was a nice deal to be an astronaut down there wearing civilian clothes and being a celebrity.
Yeah.
And to put them back into the military, into a rank, competing with guys that had been competing against each other for a long time, they were out of their element to get back.
I'm sure.
So many of them really didn't want to get back into the military. Some of them did, and some of them did well. They put them in charge of like Edwards Air Force Base. It's a flight testing place. That was kind of what they were doing, so that was a good fit. It was hard to find a good fit for astronauts in the regular service.
I could imagine.
So they said, don't take me back. You know? Not out loud.
I'm done.
But yeah. Right. I'll just stay here and drive my Corvette. Please don't take me back.
Interesting thought, though. I mean, once you've kind of been there, it's hard to go back, I guess, in a lot of ways.
They're all great guys, and each one had its own personality.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing some time with us on the story, and I guess it was rather reminiscent for you this July to look back on those days and really literally changed the world when we all glued to the TV and watched all of this, and now we're getting to relive.
Well, we have a reunion coming up, and so Sandy and I will be going down to that reunion. We're leaving here Wednesday, and we'll be down there for the weekend, and that's going to be amazing.
Excellent. That'll be fun.
That's going to be a lot of people down there, it'll be us talking to each other and kind of comparing notes and asking how we've been. But we're looking forward to that reunion.
Joey, good to see you again.
Thank you very much for having me, Todd.
We will see you around, certainly. Joey Lazaro, who's a SQUIM resident now and was right there in mission control during the Apollo 11 mission, as well as a number of others, too, for a 4-year stint or so there in the Apollo program.
This is the Todd Ortloff Show on News Radio KONP.
There have been too many opioid overdoses in Washington. You can save a life by keeping naloxone on hand. Naloxone saves lives by restoring normal breathing for someone experiencing an overdose. Anyone can administer naloxone, and it's easy to get in our state. Ask your doctor, tribal behavioral health provider, or pharmacy how you can get a naloxone kit. Learn more at stopoverdose.org.
Summertime living on the peninsula is the best, but it is even better at Parkview Villas. This is Beth, and I am so excited about the special we are offering for new residents this summer. When you choose your new apartment before August 31st, you choose your special too. That's right, you choose what's best for you. Do you want a free second month rent? Maybe for us to pay your moving expenses. How about some new kitchen appliances? Call me today at 360-452-7222. You'll be glad you did.
News on air and online at myclallamcounty.com. News Radio KONP, Port Angeles, SQUIM.